All right, Sawadee Kap. Welcome back, everybody, to the Fury and Ice podcast. And with me today, I have Corey Beck. Corey is a professional MMA fighter. He is a, I believe, was it a blue belt in jiu-jitsu?
I'm actually a purple belt in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, purple. My bad. Sorry. And you are a father of, how old is your daughter?
I have a son, and
Oh,
he's
okay.
going to be 2 in September.
Okay, nice. So why don't you fill everybody else in a little bit more complete on who you are and what you do?
Well, like you said, I'm a professional MMA fighter. I just recently went pro last November, but I have been fighting as an amateur for the last 5 years, just about. Martial arts has really kind of become my life. And with that, like you said, I'm a dad and just an active person overall. I just try to make health and fitness a part of my everyday life, and that's kind of a, I guess you could say a health and fitness enthusiast. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Yeah. So, when you started, how long ago did you start in MMA?
So, man, I started training when I was 15. So I'm 25 now. So about 10 years ago.
Okay.
But obviously, you can't start fighting in MMA until you're 18 years old. I started fighting when I was in college, so it was probably about 5 years ago now.
Okay. So how has you said you're big into the health and fitness side of it, and I've seen your Instagram and stuff, so I know you kind of get into the deeper side of fitness and health and stuff. How has it changed since you've kind of gone from like your amateur career into professional? How has your health and fitness changed?
Oh man, it's changed a lot, to be totally honest. Really the biggest thing is just being more like smarter about things, the way I go about things. And really the biggest thing is being more scientific, obviously MMA really in the grand scheme of things isn't that old of a sport. So we're kind of just still learning how to train, how to, and what the proper training should be like, how many days a week we should spar, how many days a week we should grapple, how much recovery time we should have. And early on in my career, just like really anyone that starts out, I was just training super hard all the time. And it kind of led to some overtraining and injuries and muscular dysfunctions and everything like that. So over time, I've just kind of, brought some more science into my training, making sure that I'm recovering the way that I need to be, making sure I'm eating what I need to be eating, and that's goes along with the weight cutting process that has absolutely changed over this time as well. I remember for one of my amateur fights, I cut 9 pounds of just water weight in the sauna in one day. And like that's not too crazy for some people, but like as an amateur, that's kind of stupid if I'm being honest. And just so over time, I've gotten better at like making sure I'm monitoring my body fat percentage over the course of my training camp, so I'm like losing body fat, not losing muscle, and just kind of doing a better job tracking my nutrition, tracking my training, and like I said, just adding the science into things.
Now, for your weight cutting, do you keep yourself closer to your fight weight as much as possible so you don't really have to cut that much, or?
I would say I do. I fight at 135 and I walk around at about 150. So that's a pretty small cut. Some people do that the week of fight week. And I just found that it's just like I like to diet down to about 143 or so, and then fight week I usually lose about 8 pounds of water, but never more than like 2 to 5 pounds on the day of weigh-ins. So I just make sure that I'm doing everything I need to do to be in shape before I get into camp. That's a big thing, is making sure that I'm in shape, that I'm eating right. And I'm not just trying to crash cut everything. Because when you do that, you lose muscle. You don't perform at the highest that you should be performing. And yeah, it's the weight cutting has definitely been a learning experience overall, but it's definitely changed for the better for me.
Now, does anybody work with you on the weight cutting, or is everything that you've gained knowledge-wise and experimented with just from what you've kind of found through different professionals and stuff that specialize in that?
Yeah, so I don't have a nutrition coach or weight cut coach. I've really kind of taken it upon myself to learn as much as I possibly can about that stuff. I have a science degree, so it's in geology and chemistry, so not necessarily exactly nutrition, but I do think some of that can be applied to it. So I have, you know, and I'm very passionate about nutrition, so I've made sure that I've, you know, researched and learned as much as I can about it to do it the best possible way. And there has been absolutely some experimenting to it. But like I said, it's been getting better for me. And I really think that I've been putting the science back into it. And obviously, you know, as I get further along in my career, I will probably eventually have some type of nutritionist or weight cutting coach. But really, I don't have the resources for that right now, if I'm being totally honest. Bike camps are already expensive. You know, paying for a nutritionist is just something that I can't do right now. But as I get, you know, more sponsors and things like that, then it'll be more feasible to kind of go that route.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the science part of it as well, as far as like your strength and conditioning. Now, some of the things I've seen and stuff are on your page and stuff are much different than I've seen like from other pro fighters and stuff. I mean, there's still a lot of I see a lot more pro fighters usually deadlifting and doing other things like that and stuff. In yours, I see a lot more mobility work and so forth. So could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So that is something that I've drastically changed over the last year, really. It hasn't been that long. I'm sure you're familiar with functional patterns. It's basically a methodology of strength and conditioning. And really what got me started down that path was I've been, you know, lifting in the traditional sense for, you know, as long as I can remember. I've been doing sports for a very long time. So, and I just felt like I wasn't doing it the right way. I was having aches and pains. I was having injuries, like just nagging injuries that wouldn't go away. And I wasn't super educated on biomechanics and how physiology and how the body really works. And I kind of stumbled upon functional patterns, and it was different. It was very different, and it was kind of hard to buy into at first, but it made me want to learn more, and wanting to learn more kind of helped me to dive in deep and educate myself. And then, I just got results, like incredible results. And the biggest thing is they prioritize, moving in a way that respects, not just single muscles, not just single muscle groups, but more of the fascial systems that you have, like for example, your posterior and anterior oblique slings and things like that. So really just training your body as an integrated system and not in isolation. And for me, the biggest thing was improving my posture. I felt like I had kind of hit a plateau with my strength gains. And kind of for me, what it boiled down to was I had poor posture in some areas and some muscle dysfunctions that were inhibiting me from really getting the most that I could out of my strength and conditioning. And, you know, I just really dove into the whole functional patterns methodology and got incredible results. My posture changed for the better. My aches and pains went away. And I was able to train harder with less injuries and, just move better, function better. And it's still something that's really new, I would say, in the public light. So, you know, I think we'll see more fighters kind of transitioning more to that training in the future. But yeah, it's been a really interesting thing for me so far.
Now, do you have the gym that you train at for the bulk of your, you know, for jiu-jitsu and so forth? Do you have a lot of the fighters there that you train with that also adapt to the way you train, you know, with the functional patterns?
No, not really. I'm kind of doing my own thing when it comes to that. And that's one thing, another reason why I also don't have a strength and conditioning coach. I okay. do the stuff myself. And that's really because I've been with some strength and conditioning coaches in the past, and I like a lot of what they do. They're really awesome people. They have really good systems, but sometimes it just wasn't for me, and I've really found functional patterns to be beneficial. But there are not many – there actually aren't any functional patterns certified practitioners in the St. Louis area where I'm at. The closest one is in Kansas City, and that's, you know, obviously I can't do that. That's 3 hours away. I've trained online with a functional patterns practitioner, and it was great. I learned some awesome things, but just online training wasn't for me. So I've really just kind of, again, like the nutrition stuff, taken it upon myself to learn all that I can learn about it. Okay. And, you know, when I'm in a place where I can move somewhere that does have functional patterns practitioners or get certified myself, I would love to.
Awesome. So with your MMA career right now, and with COVID, you know, and stuff, I don't know, every place in the country is a little bit different here and stuff. Has it affected your gym where you train at all?
Absolutely. It's affected just about everything. So we recently just opened back up, and, you know, things are still a little different. As far as actually fighting, I was scheduled to have a fight in March. And it was March 15th, and it was 2 days before the fight. I'd already cut most of the weight, and we thought it was still going on, like going to happen. But you know, all this COVID stuff was really in the beginning, and we just didn't know where it was going to go. Mm-hmm. And then the county came down and said that the event could not be held any longer. So it was 2 days before the fight. I found that the event had to be rescheduled. So it was pretty heartbreaking, but, you know, it was just one of those things that you got to roll with. And it got rescheduled to July. And then, you know, come a few weeks out from that, it got rescheduled again to September. And I actually just found out the other day that, again, the county came down and said that they weren't going to be able to put on the event. So the promotion, Shamrock FC, just decided to cancel the shows and give everybody refunds and kind of just rethink where they're going to go for the rest of 2020. So at that point, I didn't have a fight, but I will say, this is probably new to everyone. I haven't announced it yet, but I did just accept another fight offer, and it will be for a new promotion called America's FC in Cancun, Mexico, September 19th. So, it was a huge opportunity that kind of just fell onto my plate. And I, you know, couldn't pass it up. And, you know, I get a nice little vacation out of it, too.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that. So, where do you see your MMA career going from here?
I mean, just like anybody else, I want to be in the UFC. I want to be a world champion one day. For me, I have goals that I've set out. Like I said, I just went pro last year and haven't been able to fight since because of all this COVID stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm 1-0 right now. So I know that I have a lot of learning, a lot of developing to do before I get to the higher levels of the sport. But I plan on being in the UFC in 5 years or less. And, you know, if it takes longer, it takes longer, but that's ultimately my goal as of right now.
Okay. So, you know, and I'm familiar because I've been around a lot of fighters and stuff too and everything. And it's to get to that level, it's a large workload. I mean, between your training and then usually, you know, most guys have a job outside of that and then your home life. So how do you balance everything to just make it all work?
Oh man, that it's tough. It really is. I'm actually blessed. My job, I only work Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but I am still considered full-time because I do 12-hour shifts. So it's I have 4 days off every week, Monday through Thursday, and that gives me the opportunity to train full-time. I usually try to do 2 sessions a day. And in between those sessions, I take care of my son, hang out with him while my lady works. So it's a lot, you know, I'm constantly busy, constantly doing things, but you really just got to make it work. And, you know, at this level, I'm not making enough money to live from fighting. If I'm being totally honest, I spend more money on a training camp than I get paid for the fight, which a lot of people think is silly, but I just look at it as investing in myself. But yeah, it's a lot to balance, and it's hard. It's mentally taxing, but that's just one of those things that you have to learn to overcome. And I think with anything you do in life, if there's something that you want to do, you'll find a way to do it. And that's kind of just where I'm at. You know, another thing is I never really planned on having a child at this age, but you know, I had my son when I was 23, and that totally changed my life. I basically took a year off of fighting, and it made me have to rethink like how I was going to do everything, but I knew it wasn't going to stop me. And really it's fueled me. You know, now I have like a family that I provide for that, like, they're my why. You know, this is why I'm doing it, you know, to be a good role model for him, to show him that, you know, that he can achieve anything in his life if he works for it. So it's really, you know, some people would look at it as like something that might be limiting them, but to me, it's like, it's empowering me. And I've just found a way to do everything, you know. And some days it's not pretty, you know, some days things change and you might just be shadow boxing outside in the backyard for your training that day. But you just got to find a way to get it in and just know that you have the proper mindset to continue down this path no matter what life throws at you.
Yeah, and definitely. I mean, I just talking with you and just, you know, again, you know, watching you, following you, I should say, on Instagram and stuff, I can tell you have a real passion for what you do and everything. I mean, there's a real excitement there. So it's just, yeah, I mean, a lot of people outside of the MMA world and stuff like that, you know, they don't realize what fighters such as yourself go through really to that point. All the training, everything else involved, you know, your family is involved, even though maybe not directly into the training, but they're still involved in it. You know, all that whole process going from start to the cage, you know, it's just a very, you know, for something that you might be in there for a minute, you might be in there for 15. It's just, you know, how does your wife, I'm assuming she's your wife or girlfriend, or?
We are not married yet. But we plan to be. We're just not in the spot financially to make that happen right now. And honestly, with all the COVID stuff, it doesn't look realistic right now anyways. Okay. But yeah, that's definitely the plan.
So how does she handle the fights and so forth?
Obviously, it, you know, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard for her to watch, you know, say like if I'm, you know, on the receiving end of, you know, a beating, let's put it. But that doesn't happen too often, luckily. So, you know, it's fun for her. She gets excited watching the fights, and ultimately she supports me in everything that I do. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's sunshine and rainbows all the time, because fighting is, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of time, effort, commitment. And that means that not only is it a lot for me, but it's a lot for her, because she might have to watch our son a little more often during a fight camp, or kind of work around my schedule because it is so strenuous and tedious and everything else like that. But ultimately she's always there for me. She's always there to encourage me, to support me, to help me in any way possible. And I'm super grateful for that. I know that you know, fighting as a whole, it can be stressful and definitely put some added stress on relationships and different things like that. But, you know, like I said, she's always there for me, and it's really a blessing.
That's great to hear. So I want to backtrack a little bit. You mentioned just a bit ago, just about the whole process is really kind of mentally taxing. And I know you and I have kind of like touched base a little bit before in the past, a few times about meditation and so forth and stuff like that. Do you incorporate meditation into your daily life or into your training camps or anything like that?
I'm going to be honest. I used to be a lot better about it. Now it kind of, it's one of those things that doesn't get prioritized as much as it should, but I do try to make sure that I get it in, when I can. And really for me, it's more of like active meditation. Like, I think some people think when you're meditating, you just have to sit down and try not to think about things. And, I kind of like to let it go the other way. I like to think about it as, I'm not trying to control my mind, but I'm really just trying to let it go. I think about it as like, I let my mind go wherever it goes and I take a back seat and just watch it like a movie. And that kind of just lets my, I feel like that lets me kind of just get everything out and process everything. And I do that. I like to do that when I take my son on walks and just do simple things like that. I don't always necessarily make time to, you know, sit down and meditate in the traditional sense. But, you know, I think you can find meditation throughout the day in other ways. You know, it might just be going and getting in the shower and like turning the water really cold and standing under a cold shower and, you know, conquering that uncomfortableness of the cold shower. Or like I said, going on a walk and just kind of letting your mind go wherever it goes. And, or, you know, it might just be going to the gym, and that is your therapy. That is your meditation. So I kind of take a different approach to it now because I will say I am really, really busy. And I know that's no excuse, but I don't always meditate in the traditional sense.
Oh, yeah. No. And I totally, you know, agree with you. I mean, it's, meditation comes in many different forms, you know, myself and stuff, when I have time, I'll do the seated, I might do my moving meditation, or even if I'm out walking my dog or whatever, it's just a whole, you know, my mind, I just kind of let it go in a certain direction. And I just find those little pockets of space and everything. And it really works out well that way, you know, just to kind of have a variety and stuff. So for you, like say on fight day, your day of your fight and stuff, what goes through your mind that day? I mean, what's the process for you, you know, from, I guess we'll say, you know, weigh-ins to, you know, stepping in that cage?
Really, it's just a matter of, the biggest thing you're focused on is rehydrating and making sure you're fueled the way that you should be. So thinking about what my meals are going to be and prepping them and making sure I can, you know, get all the nutrients in that I can at the appropriate times. That's where a lot of my focus goes. And I like that because it kind of takes my mind off of the fight itself for a time being, because if you think too much about the fight before it happens, you might psych yourself out and, you know, it's just kind of like difficult mentally. But I do a lot of visualization. I'm a big proponent of that. I think that it's really just another way to train, you know, like if you visualize things, you visualize, you know, what you're going to do, what might happen, what could happen. You're just kind of reinforcing those pathways in your brain where, you know, like, okay, if this happens, this is how I'm going to react, you know, and it kind of makes it more of like a subconscious thing. So you're not having to think so much when you're in the cage, you're kind of getting into a flow state. But yeah, I just try to go along for the ride. And, you know, I think one thing that people don't understand a lot of times is they think fighters are fearless. And I don't really think that's the case. I think there's always fear when you step into the cage. I think what makes fighters different is we face that fear and we try to overcome it. And yeah, it's not like we're just crazy fearless people, you know, like we might be a little more fearless than others, but it's always still there, you know. You get the nerves. It's just a matter of making sure that you channel them into you know, in a positive way. You can either let those nerves and that fear take over and you can crumble under the pressure, or you can kind of use it as fuel. And the way, like, you know, I really think that I do a lot more meditation per se on fight day than really anything else, because I'm constantly visualizing and visualizing what I'm going to do, how the fight's going to go, all possible scenarios. And that kind of helps me channel those nerves and like make sure that I have faith in myself, my abilities, and ultimately know that, hey, I have the tools that it takes to get in there and to do what I need to do. But it doesn't make it any less more difficult.
Okay. So like your mindset now for your last fight, and if you think back to your very first fight, how has your mindset just grown over that time or changed? Because I mean, usually I would think, you know, like your first fight, first time stepping in a cage or a ring, whatever, you know, your first fight was in, you know, never gone through that before, it seems to be a little daunting, you know, maybe a little bit more intimidating than it is now, just because you've kind of gone through the process a few times. Is that kind of correct?
Yes and no. So let's look at it this way. So first of all, for my very first fight, I, once I got into the cage, I'm going to be honest, I only remember a couple seconds of it. And I feel like I kind of blacked out and just, was on autopilot. And with every fight since then, I've gotten more comfortable and more aware when I'm in there. So, that's kind of where I'm at now. I was 9-2 as an amateur. So I had 11 amateur fights and I've had one pro fight. So, you know, that's quite a few fights, nothing crazy, but more than a lot of people at this stage. And so with every fight, I've learned a little bit more. I've gotten a little bit more comfortable. So I'm like more aware of, you know, what's going on. I'm more aware of the situation and I'm more, I have the better ability to kind of like think through things and think critically and not just be on autopilot. But because of that, that makes every fight a little bit different, because I feel, you know, I'm mentally, it just feels a little bit different in there. So I guess you could say you do get more comfortable, but with that comfortability, it's still different every time. So it's kind of just one thing that it's a new challenge that you have to conquer every single fight.
Okay. So, now when you train and everything, we know about the strength and conditioning, you know, your nutrition process and so forth, obviously jiu-jitsu, what else are you, do you do like a lot of Muay Thai or what?
I really try to do it all. You know, my striking is more of like a kickboxing based striking than traditional Muay Thai, I would say. But really the biggest thing that has changed for me recently is getting into wrestling a lot more. Over the past couple of years, I've really just been trying to immerse myself in wrestling, because I think that's probably one of the best skill sets to have. And, you know, when you're talking about wrestling against Division I, you know, all American wrestlers, like you gotta be able to compete. And I think a lot of times people think like, okay, I got to learn to wrestle just like they did. But for me, I tend to spend most of my time wrestling like on the wall or on the cage, because that is an aspect that is only in MMA. There is no other combat sport where you are in, where you are grappling in an enclosed area. So cage wrestling is, you know, that is one thing that is only in MMA. So that's one thing that I've been trying to get good at, that way that I can wrestle with, you know, the highest level wrestlers. And it kind of adds another aspect to my game, you know, and adds on to the jiu-jitsu and the striking that I do have.
Okay. And your jiu-jitsu, how long have you been a practitioner?
So like I said, I've been training since I was 15. So I started doing jiu-jitsu then, but it wasn't really like my main focus. And I kind of just did it, in the off season of other sports and whatnot. I really got into training jiu-jitsu like full time when I was in college, when I, really started fighting. And that was the first time I ever put on a gi. And, from there, I just I started doing jiu-jitsu 3 times a week and just really fell in love with it and found that that was really my strong point. And I've just ran with it ever since. I don't train in the gi as much anymore since MMA is more my focus, but at like, I still want to be a black belt in jiu-jitsu someday. So I know that I got to put the gi back on and really kind of get back into that side of things. But yeah.
Okay. Do you, and has it been the same, same coach or trainer, with the jiu-jitsu that you've had since you've started?
So when I was in college and really started, I was down in Springfield, Missouri at Team Fusion Jiu-Jitsu. And my coach down there was Brad Montgomery. And I've since moved back to St. Louis, so I train at a different gym. But I still have the connection with Team Fusion down in Springfield. And Brad, my coach, he still finds me fights and corners me for every single one of my fights. He's been in my corner for every single one of my fights, and that's something that I'm super grateful for, and kind of just gives me that comfortability in the cage. But yeah, Team Fusion is an affiliate of Zenith Jiu-Jitsu, which is head professor there is Robert Drysdale. So I actually received my blue belt and my purple belt from Robert Drysdale himself. And so that's, you know, a pretty big thing to me. You know, Robert Drysdale is a world champion in jiu-jitsu, was, you know, an MMA fighter himself and a coach. He trains with Frank Mir a lot. Okay. That might be somebody that you know more of. But yeah, so I still have ties with them, but I do. I'm obviously in St. Louis now, so I don't get to go down there and train as often as I would like, but I still do jiu-jitsu up here. But yeah, that's kind of where my jiu-jitsu is at.
Okay. Now with that, are there any fighters out there that, you know, that you follow closely to watch their styles and so forth, as far as ones that you find inspiration through, for jiu-jitsu or maybe wrestling or whatever it happens to be?
Well, let's put it this way. I was a huge fan of TJ Dillashaw and his style and everything, you know, just combining the striking with the grappling, the wrestling, the jiu-jitsu. But as everybody knows, he popped for EPO, which is steroids, so that was pretty disappointing. But I don't think that takes away from his skill set. And so I like that kind of style. I also, someone that I watch a lot that a lot of people might not know as much is Tim Elliott. He's a flyweight, and he's been doing it for a really long time. He's got a really awkward style, but he's super good with transitioning between striking, wrestling, grappling, scrambling, getting submissions, and things like that. And he trains with James Krause up in Kansas City at Glory MMA. Okay. And they have a – seems like a really great program up there, and James really seems like a technician. So he's been one of the, you know, fighters that I've been following closely and trying to learn from, even though I don't actively train with them, but like trying to, you know, watch his fights, watch his style, buy his instructional videos and different things like that. I think he's the best at kind of tying everything together, where a lot of fighters are good in one area and they are good in, or they might be good in all areas. But again, one thing that is, you know, unique to MMA is you got to be able to do it all at the same time and kind of like fill the gaps, you know, so you got to be able to strike into takedowns and then get in good positions to ground and pound and look for submissions. It's not, you're not just striking and then grappling and then, you know, trying to submit somebody. You got to tie it all together. And I really think that James Krause is the best at that. And I think that's kind of coming to the light more so now than it has previously. But yeah, he's probably the main person that I like to watch and learn from that way.
Okay. Now with, you know, you're part of Shamrock FC and everything and stuff. And just from what you've been around, from what you see, do you find that, fighters are coming up, like the They're a lot more well-rounded. Like younger fighters are just coming up just, you know, I mean, they have the wrestling, they have the jiu-jitsu, they have, you know, kickboxing or Muay Thai, whatever they're specializing in. Do you find that there's more of that now with everybody just kind of having that
Yeah, I think that's kind of a shift that MMA has made. It's modern day MMA is all about you got to be good everywhere. And since it went mainstream, you have a lot more people that are training in all styles from a younger age, so you know they're going to be good everywhere. So that's kind of something that you got to make sure that you can fight wherever the fight goes. So to me, I think it's better to be well-rounded than to be a specialist in one area. And I will say, like, I definitely favor jiu-jitsu in my fights. I like to go out there and grapple and submit people and whatnot, but I'm definitely not afraid to strike, and I can still do a little bit of everything. And I think, yeah, just MMA has changed in that modern day MMA. You have to be good everywhere. And that just adds a level of difficulty to the training because you have to find a balance. Kind of like we were talking about earlier, is like what you should train, when you should train it, you know, whether you're, you know, whether how many times you do striking a week, how many times you grapple, how many times you do MMA where you're mixing it all together, and to kind of fill the holes in your game. So it's always evolving. You always have to be able to change what you're doing and how you're doing it just to keep up with it, because like I said before, it's still a pretty young sport. Like what the UFC was founded in 1993, so like that's not a terribly long time. So you know, as people learn more, as people start doing it longer and longer, you know, that it's gonna keep changing, keep evolving, and you have to adapt. You have to adapt and overcome, and that's the only way that you'll really progress. And you have to do that, especially if you're in it for the long haul, like I am.
Now, from the amateur side, when you went through that, obviously amateurs aren't getting paid anything, period. Have your so for people out there that might be considering, you know, diving into the MMA world and possibly trying to make a career out of it and so forth, what would you know, from an amateur side, what would you tell them?
I think the biggest thing is you have to find a support system. You have to find people that are going to have your better interests in mind, and people that are going to have your back. And you know, whether that's teammates, coaches, family, friends, whatever. That's kind of like a big thing. You see a lot of amateur fighters that they do what you call gym hopping. You know, they go here and learn some things, they go there and learn some things, and like they're all over the place, but they never really establish a good relationship with any coaches or teammates. And I think that kind of is detrimental in the long run. I'm not saying you shouldn't cross train. I'm a huge proponent of that, and I do it a little bit myself, but I do think that you have to really find a coach and a team that you feel comfortable with and that you feel supported and you feel like they are going to help you get to the next level and build that relationship deeply. Like I was saying, my coach Brad Montgomery and my team from Springfield, you know, they've been with me since day one, even after I moved, and that's just a relationship that I plan on having through my whole career, and I think it's invaluable, really.
Nice. So, and as far as the how has so a little bit on the deeper end here, like the testing, as far as what you like your medical tests and so forth, from amateur to professional, has that changed a lot from what they require?
No, not really. I know a lot of amateur shows didn't require blood work or anything like that for a while, but I will say the amateur shows that I fought on did. So you know, I've been pretty used to going and getting my blood work done every so often for my fights, and then making sure that, you know, I get my physical and all of that before the fights. Obviously in amateur and in a lot of pro promotions, they don't do really any drug testing, so that's like the USADA stuff. That's not something that we have to deal with right now, but that's something that once you get into the UFC, you will have to deal with. So I definitely urge people to stay away from anything that, you know, could kind of get used to using. You know, and that's just regular supplements. I think there's a lot of supplements out there that you'll realize they have like banned substances in them from USADA and whatnot. And you get used to, like, some people might get used to using them, then realize like when they're in the UFC, they fail a drug test and they don't even know why. You know, you see that often. And so, yeah, that's one aspect that is different from the UFC and, you know, the lower levels of things. But, you know, the medicals and all that kind of stuff, it's just kind of normal. It's been there for my whole career so far, and it's going to continue being there. You know, before the fight, they check you out. After the fight, they check you out. You know, the commission gives out suspensions if necessary and things like that. So it's part of the sport, and I think it's being implemented even more now, which is really a great thing. I think, you know, a big thing is brain health. And obviously there is traumatic brain injuries that happen in MMA because of, you know, when you're talking about getting knocked out and different things like that, that's something we have to be aware of. So I think that's one thing that people, you know, should focus on, learn about, and know, like, hey, the medicals that you go through, they're for a reason. They have a purpose. It's not just, you're not just going through them like just to do them. Like, they're really trying to look out for your safety. And I don't think that should be undervalued either.
Now, speaking of that, brain health, have you done a lot of research on your own into CTE and so forth?
I have done quite a bit, just because I have had concussions in the past. You know, I played hockey and football and all that kind of stuff. So I know that I have had concussions before, and it's definitely something that I'm always kind of monitoring. And another reason why I think, you know, as MMA progresses, you see more guys sparring less and less, not necessarily because you don't need to spar, but because, you know, if you go into the gym and you spar hard two or three times a week, like, you're bound to, whether you actually are actively concussed or not, you have a lot of people talk about like a punch ticket. You can only take so many hits to the head over the course of your career. So you don't want to be wasting them in training. Obviously you need to go in and spar and get that intensity and that feel for, you know, what it's going to be like in the fight. But I think it's, as MMA progresses, it's moving more towards a lot more technical sparring and doing other things where you only spar hard, like every so often. And it really depends on the individual. Some people feel the need to do it more than others. But it's definitely something that I consider a lot. I take my brain health into consideration when it comes to my training. And it's still brain health is still a pretty unexplored area. So I think we'll continue to learn more and find out more for quite a while into the future. And really, it's definitely something you think about, and it'll make you think twice about the career path that you've chosen. But ultimately, again, it's a risk and reward kind of thing. And I'm in this, I've chosen this. Sometimes I think that it chose me, and it is something that I'm, you know, MMA is something that I'm passionate about that I want to do. So obviously I'd look out for my brain health and everything like that, but I know that it's always going to, there's always risk there, and that's just part of it.
Now, when you do spar, do you wear headgear or anything like that, or is it just kind of a...
I do not wear headgear. Honestly, I'm not a huge fan of headgear. I think headgear can kind of give you like a false sense of confidence, and I don't really think it's super effective. And you know, there's been a few studies on it with amateur boxing and whatnot, but I think ultimately, like, a lot of times it disrupts your vision when you're training, and that makes you more likely to get hit with a punch that you don't see coming, and that's the worst kind of punch to get hit with, you know, or kick. So I don't typically wear headgear, but again, you know, we make sure that as training partners, we're looking out for each other. You know, we're not trying to knock each other out in the gym. Obviously, we're going hard like we need to when we need to do it, but we're smart about when we do it, how we do it. And you really got to be smart about who you train with, too. Like, I'm a lighter weight guy. I fight at 135. So, like, you're not going to see me sparring with, like, heavyweights, like, middleweights, guys like that. Like, that's just not, you know, I'm not scared by any means. I've done that before, like, but it's just not smart. You know, that's a, like, they're going to hit harder than what I need to be hit, you know. I'm not going to be fighting anybody like that in the cage. So it's really just kind of being smart about your training.
Yeah, it sounds like at the gym that you do train at, you have kind of you have a wide range of fighters there. It sounds like different weight. So basically, because I know like some gyms that you might train in, you know, like for me, I'd be a heavyweight. There might not be a lot of heavyweights in there. So you might be sparring against, you know, lighter weight guys and vice versa.
Yeah. So at my gym, Finney's MMA, we do have a pretty wide range of fighters. We're lucky that we have quite a few lighter weight guys too, which I think, like, it's hard to come across guys that fight at, you know, 125 and 135, and then guys that fight at like 205 and heavyweight. You know, obviously those are at the ends of the spectrum, so you're always going to find more people that are right in the middle. But yeah, we have a nice array of different size guys. And, you know, especially for me, we have some lighter weight guys, which is good because, you know, that gives you better looks, more realistic training and everything like that.
Okay. So, again, your goal is the UFC. What made you choose the UFC over, say, like Bellator, ONE Championship, and, you know, maybe some of the other promotions out there?
Okay, so, like, I'm not opposed to any of those. I would gladly fight in Bellator. I would gladly fight in ONE. I think the biggest thing about the UFC is the UFC has the most notoriety. That's where, like, you know, how many times do you hear somebody say, like, oh, you do UFC, like, instead of saying you do MMA? Mm-hmm. Like, UFC is, like, they're the poster child for all of MMA. That's where, you know, that's where a lot of people would argue the true, like, world champions are. And I think that does a disservice to a lot of guys that are in you know, in Bellator and ONE Championship that, you know, definitely could compete with all of the champions in the UFC. But I think the UFC, that they have the name, you know, and it's not so much, you know, you spend so much time investing in yourself to be a fighter. It's not really about the money or anything like that. It's really about, you know, just getting in there and doing it for yourself and competing with the best. And I don't think anyone would argue with you when you say that the UFC has the highest caliber of fighters.
So when you, with the UFC, you get your contract and you have these fighters in front of you in your weight division that you can pick. Who would be like your, I don't know if I want to say dream opponent, but who would you like to, I mean, if you had a, if Dana White came to you right now and said, we're offering you a one-fight contract, who do you want to fight in this division to kind of prove that you belong here in the UFC? Who would you pick?
Oh, man. Well, okay, so, like, I'm going to give you two guys.
Okay.
So my absolute dream matchup would be Uriah Faber. I know he's retired now, but he's been one of my favorite fighters of all time, and I just think it would be a total honor to share the cage with him. But if I'm going to pick somebody that is in the UFC right now that I would want to fight, I think it would be Sean O'Malley. I think Sean O'Malley, he's one of those guys that he's an up-and-comer. And he, you know, so he has a lot behind him. He has a big name. He's going to be a star of the sport. He really already is. So I think getting in there and mixing it up with him would be it'd be a tough task. And I think it'd be silly for me to say that I could go in there and take him out. But I think it would, you know, doing that would give me a lot of put me in the public light and definitely would kind of skyrocket me to the next level for sure.
Nice. All right. So And you said your goal within 5 years is UFC, maybe a little bit longer depending on things and stuff. Is there a certain, so people listening and stuff, how this progression works, you know, from amateur to say regional pro, I guess, if you will, on the smaller level, and then to the big league organizations. How does that process go about? How do you get like those, I guess, fight auditions, if you will, or whatever, with like the UFC or Bellator One? Is it through a management or is it just through the number of fights? How does that work?
I think it's a little bit of both. Obviously, you got to go out there and win fights. You got to make sure that you're fighting tough guys and you're beating them. And first of all, know that you can compete at that level. But in the end, I think there's plenty of guys out there that have the skills to be in the UFC, to be in Bellator, to be in ONE, and they just never get the opportunity. So I think it is a lot about your management and, again, that support system that I was talking about earlier, to and making sure that they can get you the opportunities that you need, you know. And you might only get one opportunity in your career that you have to make sure you capitalize on. But I think that's really it is you know, you work your way up through the regional scene. You got to win tough fights. You got to, you know, fight guys that'll kind of get you noticed, and be smart about who you fight. Because once you have, you know, a certain number of losses, the UFC really doesn't look at you anymore. So it's like, in one way, you got to make sure you're fighting the toughest guys, but you also got to be honest with yourself of where your skills are at to make sure that, you know, the risk and reward is there. So you just got to fight and kind of build yourself up. And a big thing now is being able to promote yourself, kind of making sure, like, not playing a character, but making sure that you have like a following, making sure that you have an audience that, you know, that's kind of a big thing. And as you continue to fight, you got to have a good team behind you that'll find you opportunities, and then eventually make it to the big leagues. And I kind of equate it to, like, if let's look at like baseball, for example, there's single A, double A, triple A, and then the MLB. And that's kind of the stages you got to go through as a fighter. You know, you're an amateur, then you're a low level pro, then you're kind of a higher name on the regional circuit. Then you might fight at like a national level on a show like, you know, like LFA, Titan FC, things like that. One of those like feeder organizations. And then you finally get your chance in Bellator, the UFC. So it's really a long process, and it's, you know, you just got to make sure you get an opportunity, and you can't pass up the opportunity when it comes. You just got to do it and, you know, capitalize on it.
And you mentioned self-promotion. So yeah, marketing is a huge thing. You know, I know there's a lot of great fighters out there, you know, boxing included and stuff, but they'll never get those opportunities because they're not marketable very well. You know, right. I think Demetrius Johnson is one of them. Amazing, fantastic fighter. Just is not marketable to, like, say, the U.S. audience really well. And then you have somebody on the opposite side of that fence, like Conor McGregor, which is kind of a larger-than-life persona and, you know, puts butts in seats, sells pay-per-views and all this stuff and everything else. And I remember when he started kind of gaining on that ladder of popularity, a lot of fighters, a few fighters, started kind of following his lead. But where he seems more genuine, I've never met him, but he seems more genuine when he does it. Like, it's just part of his personality. Other fighters were kind of like playing a character, like you said. You can't really kind of do that because people will start to see through that, and it just kind of comes off really badly. So from a marketing standpoint, when you look at, you know, like a Conor McGregor or somebody on that level that's got that kind of star power, how do you, you know, how does that change, like when you, with your goal of getting into the UFC, does that change the way you view as far as like how you need to market yourself from how you're doing now, or?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing is you got to build an organic audience. You know, you can't, well, you could take a guy like Colby Covington or whatever, who will play the character and everybody kind of sees through it, and you become a villain. You can take that road, or you can take the road where, you know, you let your fighting skills do the talking and you just, you know, present yourself with confidence and other things like that. But I really think that it starts from like the lowest level that you're at, like being an amateur, being a low level pro. Like, you got to build your following. You got to make sure you get out there and you meet people. You got to be an exciting fighter. You got to have people that want to watch you. You got to sell tickets. You got to promote yourself on social media. So I think it really starts from the beginning. And I think a lot of guys think like, oh, I'll get all that stuff when I get into the UFC or whatever. But really, I think it's all of that promotional, like self-promotion, is kind of just another aspect of getting yourself there. So like for me, I make sure that, like I have a website. I reach out, I actively, you know, reach out to sponsors, and I try to sell as many tickets to my fights as I can. I like to do podcasts like this, interviews, make sure that I can promote myself on social media, and I'm constantly trying to grow my social media accounts, provide value to people out there, and really ultimately just like connect with fans. I think that, you know, a lot of people try to, like we were talking about, like be a character. And like you said, people see through that. They can tell when you're not being real. So ultimately, you got to be yourself. And I think being yourself allows you also to connect with people on a deeper level. And when you can make those connections with, you know, with fans and people that follow you, that's when they're going to be a fan for the long haul. So it's a gradual build. It, like, some people, obviously they go from nothing to superstardom super quick, but that's not a typical case. Usually you're building your audience, you're following from the ground up and having a good foundation and continuously building it throughout your career. I think that's like ultimately the way to go.
And with your social media presence and so forth, has there been, since you, has there been a lot of opportunities that have opened up to you because of social media that might not have been there if you didn't really have that much of a presence, you know?
As far as like fight opportunities, no, not really. You get fight opportunities, obviously, through your management team and whoever finds you fights. But social media has really given me the ability to connect with fans, like I was saying, and you know, have like influence, a positive influence on other people that kind of, you know, I'm not necessarily just doing this for me. Like, if I can have the influence to show other people like, hey, you can do what you want to do and you can chase your dreams, and you know, have other people that are inspired by that, that's awesome to me. And social media has really given me the ability to connect with people. And like you, for example, we connected over social media. I've connected with other people to do interviews over social media. And so, yeah, it just kind of gives you a level of like outreach and to put yourself out there to gain like an audience, a following, and connect with people. But ultimately, it doesn't necessarily like, it's not like promoters are reaching out to me because of my social media, like, hey, I want you to fight for me. That's, you know, that's not really the case, but it gives you, you know, it, your social media gives you the opportunity to, you know, sell more tickets, to connect with fans, and ultimately like get your persona out there so people can see like who you are, what you're about, and not just like, what you do in the cage. I think one thing that people really like to see is like how you train, the aspects of your life, like the behind the scenes kind of stuff. And that's what social media allows you to do, is like kind of show that to fans. And that kind of just gets them to, you know, indulge in your content and want to watch you fight even more.
Now, how can people, now you're obviously active on your Instagram. You mentioned you did have a website. Yep. So what are those both under? So if anybody wants to follow you and your journey.
My Instagram handle is Corey Beck MMA, and my website is CoreyBeckMMA.com. Just to keep it simple, they're the same thing. And then You can find me on Facebook just under Corey Beck. It's my personal page. I do have an athlete page, but I'm not the best about posting on it. Facebook is more of like a close-knit group of people, whereas like Instagram and my website and other things, that kind of gives me the ability to reach out to a larger audience. So yeah.
Okay. And your website, is there anything that, so I've seen your Instagram. I apologize, but I haven't been to your website yet and stuff. And I will actually check it out after the podcast today. But is there any difference between the Instagram and what's on your website?
Yes, a little bit. It's nothing too crazy. It really just kind of gives you a little bit of insight into like who I am, why I'm doing this. It shows my sponsors, so you can kind of see like who supports me. There's a couple blog posts for like, you know, different things, different topics. So it's just another form of media that people can interact with. Obviously Instagram's kind of my main thing, and I don't have a huge following, but I think I have a quality following nonetheless. So yeah.
Okay, great. Well, Corey, I really thank you for taking time today to talk to me. I really enjoyed it. And I know we were going to do this last week, but you kind of had a little bell ringer and stuff. So I totally understand that, been there and everything. But I hope you're doing well and stuff now and everything.
Yeah, I'm feeling better. Yeah, I caught a punch that I didn't see coming, and I kind of got rocked and had to take a few days off and make sure I was doing okay, you know, going back to that whole brain health thing. But yeah, I really appreciate you having me on here. I really enjoy doing this kind of stuff, and I hope that maybe we can do it again in the future.
Oh, definitely, most definitely. So do you have any parting words for everybody before we go?
Really just like, I'm super grateful for everyone that follows my stuff, that reaches out to me, that comes to my fights, that buys tickets, that supports me in any way, shape or form. I wouldn't be here where I am today without all of that. So really just thank you.
Okay. And also real quick, with your fight coming up in Cancun, do you know if that's going to be able, if they're going to be streaming that online or?
Yes, there is going to be a pay-per-view. I don't have the details for that yet, but I will definitely be letting everyone know how they can watch and how they can tune in. And if, you know, for people that are in the St. Louis area, I'm trying to get a watch party kind of set up, so that I think that would be a fun thing for everybody to go to and watch the fight with a group of people and things like that. But yeah, there will be a pay-per-view. I don't have the details on it yet, but I will let everyone know when I do.
Okay, awesome. Yes, and when you do, let me know and stuff, and I'll promote that on my page as well for you. So,
yeah, man, I appreciate that.
You betcha, man. Well, all right. I thank you again for your time today and stuff. Really enjoyed the conversation and getting to know more about you and stuff, since we've been Instagram friends, I guess, if you will, for a little while and everything. So it's been a pleasure, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, man.
Thank you. You too. Have a good one.
Thanks.